First of all, I want to thank each and every one of you for all the love.
Let's do this. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening and for subscribing. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Ramil and from Locked On Magic, Philip Rossman Reich. We're here recapping one of the biggest games of the season for both the Heat and the Magic, a game the Magic won 104-99 that had massive playoff implications. With the win, Orlando moves a half game ahead of Miami for the number 8th seed in the East. Nikola Vucevic was awesome for them, finished with 24 points, 16 rebounds, and 5 assists. The Heat were led by Dwayne Wade, who had 22 points off the bench, and Deion Waiters, who finished with 26 and made a few late shots to try to get Miami back in it, but it was too little too late. But credit the Magic's defense, which limited the Heat to just 10 points in the paint in the second half, at least by my count. Philip, that's a Steve Clifford special.
It is a Steve Clifford special, and that was just the Magic coming off the game against Philadelphia. That's kind of what they did last Monday night against the Sixers. Just kind of weird first half, just work, didn't have the energy, and then they just kind of click into place in the second half and did just a good job. And really, I think the big key was they limited the Heat on the offensive glass. Miami, I thought, did a really good job getting offensive rebounds, getting second chances. Orlando kind of shut that off there in the second half, and I think that's a big reason why they were able to get their offense back into a rhythm. They were able to get the Heat kind of retreating instead.
David, what did you see from that Magic defense? Would you credit more, you know, what they were able to do to Miami, or did you just say, like, this was, look, the Heat just missed a bunch of shots? Because they missed 23 of the 33 three-pointers that they took. But if you look at the Magic, they didn't do a whole lot better, but Miami's sort of formula has been three-point shooting all season long.
I placed it at kind of 50-50. I know that's a little vague, but I think the reality is there were some open looks there. And, you know, you have to give credit to Orlando for making Miami uncomfortable and getting them to take shots maybe they wouldn't normally have taken. There was a lot of pressure there. And some guys that we've come to expect to hit big shots recently, like Kelly Olynyk and Goran Dragic, just didn't come up all that big. Josh Richardson, in particular, 4 of 12 overall for just, you know, he did have 17 points, but most of those were at the free throw line, despite, you know, he had a big first quarter, but he kind of really tailed off after that. I think, you know, Orlando did a really, really good job of, again, as Villa pointed out, leading that rebounding edge and limiting Miami's opportunities for second shot attempts and things of that sort. As far as the three-point shooting is concerned, I didn't see anything particularly noteworthy from Orlando's defense. Again, they were running guys off the line a little bit, but there were plenty of open looks from Miami shooters. They just weren't knocking those down in particular. And you can't discount the kind of emotions that came from watching the Chris Bosh, you know, jersey retirement ceremony. As I kind of talked about when we were predicting a win-loss for this game, I know we'll probably talk about that a little bit more. Those kind of emotions and energies, they kind of really disrupt Miami for whatever reason. It seems like they just need a kind of, you know, insular focus, and they just didn't have that in the third quarter. Obviously, the third quarters have been a problem for Miami in the past, but they were particularly bad tonight, where Orlando led that scoring edge 34-19, and Miami just never really quite seemed to get into a rhythm after that.
Yeah, Miami, it seemed, had a pretty good handle on the game in the first half, and then obviously you've got the Bosh retirement ceremony. And look, I don't want to blame the whole thing on a retirement ceremony, but you've got like this Super Bowl-length halftime situation.
that delay was insane. Like,
that was, I mean, and look, Bosch gave an amazing speech, but that was a long speech, dude. Like, that went a while. Like, it was in two languages. So, look, Steve Clifford is in that locker room, like, figuring out how to stop Miami's offense, right? Which had been rolling for that first
and
half.
And Orlando's offense.
Eric Spoelstra is sitting there in the crowd watching Bosch speak. So, like, there might have been a coaching edge there.
Yeah, and I mean, Clifford, I think, addressed this after the game and said that, you know, he kind of went through this when the Magic beat the Heat during Alonzo Mourning's halftime ceremony. That
so this is the thing. This is a trend.
I told,
a
but thing. I told you this, Wes. I told you this. I think Miami.
Well, I wasn't
Tim
listening
Hardaway,
to you.
Oh, yeah, obviously not. Tim, it goes back to that 2006 ring ceremony when the Heat were getting their rings after their first championship and they got absolutely blown out by the Chicago Bulls. Ever since then, there's been this trend. Every time there's a jersey retirement ceremony, Shaq, Zoes, I think they are 0-3 in jersey retirement.
I think they said on the broadcast that for jersey retirements, the Heat were 2-1. The only loss before tonight was to the Magic during Alonzo Mourning's retirement ceremony.
Really?
Okay. What's the Magic's record during retirement ceremonies?
Don't have any.
The Magic do not retire jerseys. They're waiting until they win a championship.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
What's the name of that weird team.
I don't know what we're doing.
They have that wing where Penny's jersey is. I'm not sure who else's jersey is there. What is that called?
Yeah, how do you not retire Penny?
They have the Orlando Magic Hall of Fame where they have whoever's they're honoring speak to the media, family, and friends before the game, and then they honor them at midcourt at the like quarter break. They don't give a speech or anything. So like they got Shaq, they got Penny, they got Nick Anderson, T-Mac, got Pat Williams, Rich DeVos.
Is Dwight in there? Dwight Howard's not in there?
They're waiting till they'll wait till Dwight retires.
Oh, they have to wait. Okay, well. Okay, that makes sense. Does Dwight Howard get his jersey retired when they eventually start doing that?
Every signal that Alex Martins, the team CEO, has put out is they're waiting until they win a championship to retire a jersey. Like, that's part of the criteria of getting your jersey in the rafters, which
if you're not part of the championship team, what does it matter?
Ooh.
The next person
who will have his jersey retired will be part of that championship team. That seems to be the standard for the team. I don't make
Gordon
the rules. I just follow them.
Obviously, you don't make the rules. I mean, ridiculous rules.
I posted this on Twitter during halftime. If the Magic did retire jerseys, they'd have Nick Anderson, they'd have Shaq, they'd have Penny, they'd have T-Mac already up in the rafters.
Shaq would be in there.
Shaq would definitely be in there. He's already in the Hall of Fame. He's in the team Hall of Fame.
Okay, well that makes sense. All right. Well, anyway, this game. Look,
game, it's been derailed by Hall of Fame, by jersey retirement.
Yeah,
that's right. It was that second half, man. The Heat. I try not to get too much into this. You try not to play the results so much, and this is a game where Kelly Olynyk, James Johnson, Goran Dragic combined to go 0-8 from 3-point range. Like, and then David, you mentioned Josh Richardson, 4-12. He really, really struggled. I thought the Magic did a really nice job. Cutting, like, really dropping back Vucevic, but also walling off the paint. They played that old, like, Tom Thibodeau in Boston-style defense where you basically just ignore the weak side and you just rush the strong side and you just completely block off every driving lane. And that's Miami's bread and butter, right, is driving and kicking, and just rinse-repeat until you find a decent shot. And Orlando basically took that away, and I think that's a big part of why the Magic have – in the last couple of years, played this version of the Heat pretty well. But you'd like to see at some point the Heat make an adjustment. And basically their only answer was, okay, we'll settle for mid-range floaters we'll try these weird acrobatic shots in the lane to try to get around the defense. Like, David, what else could they have done other than just kind of shoot and pray and hope these three-pointers eventually started going in?
It seemed like they weren't really passing the ball particularly well either. I mean, they did finish with 25 assists to their 36 made field goals, but at the same time, it just seemed like a lot of that was more kind of dishes at the rim, or maybe finding an outlet there if they had closed off the lane and then maybe, happened to find an open shooter to knock it down. I don't know that there was much of an answer there, to be honest with you. I mean, I did like Dwayne Wade's approach. He was able to finish with 22 points, and a lot of that, as you pointed out, on weird shooting. To be honest with you, I did, it's a little bit more aggressively driving to the hoop, maybe be able to challenge some of their length in there. I mean, Vucevic isn't much of a rim protector, but between Jonathan Isaac and Aaron Gordon, they've got enough athleticism and length there to make things difficult for the guys that are driving there. I didn't see anything in particular, I'll be honest with you. Maybe that I shouldn't say that publicly, but the reality is I didn't see anything that maybe they could have done a little bit differently to capitalize on it. Did you?
No, and I actually wanted to ask Philip because, like, dude, you're watching these Magic games, and this is sort of what they do. Has a team, because again, like I said, Miami has historically struggled over the last couple of seasons with this type of thing. When whether Steve Clifford was in Charlotte or here, what's the formula to beat? Like, what teams beat the Magic with that? I know like the Magic are below 500, so a lot of teams beat the Magic. But like, what is the offense that typically does best against that style of defense, in your opinion?
I mean, it's all about getting to the middle of the floor. I mean, Orlando is a top 10 defensive team, and it's so weird to say that, but it's fact now at this point. But it always feels like the Magic's defense is sort of on the cliff. Like, they could very easily kind of fall off and give up a ton of points. You go back to, like, even Friday's game against Memphis, which they also felt were down by 17 in that game and had to storm back to win that one. Memphis did a really good job running pick and rolls that got Nikola Vucevic kind of backpedaling and giving up the middle of the lane. I thought that Orlando, especially in the second half of this game, not so much in the first half, but in the second half, did a really good job forcing Miami's ball handlers toward the corners where they could overload the strong side. Once you get into the middle of the lane, once you get a guy going kind of right at Vucevic with both sides of the basket and both wings available to him to pass, that's when this Magic defense gets into a lot of trouble, because Vucevic is a better defender and has played defense a lot better, but he isn't beating anyone super athletic coming right at him. I mean, he couldn't get out of the way of that Derrick Jones dunk, for crying out loud, which seems almost forgotten at this point. But that's
crazy.
That's really how you beat this Magic team, is you got to find a way to get into the middle of the paint and force Vucevic into one-on-one defensive situations.
Yeah, and we didn't see, David, those typical Bam Adebayo lobs, no lobs to Whiteside, and I think that's exactly the reason why Dragic, Waiters, Dwayne Wade, they kept getting forced to the corners. And that kind of goes into one of our Twitter questions. We'll take your Twitter questions after this break. Let's go to Twitter to answer some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Brian writes in, which team is more talented, the Magic or the Heat? David, I'm really interested to see what you say here, because I think I know which way you're going to lean.
I, you know, this is a particularly tough one. Talent, you know, that's so difficult to quantify. I feel like talent is often ascribed to players that just haven't reached their full potential. And if that's the case, you've still got Mo Bamba there, and you're not exactly sure what you're going to get out of him eventually. I mean, he could become a really, really, you know, incredible player. Jonathan Isaac has just started to scratch the ceiling there. I mean, there's just...
Well, let me ask, can I reformat the question then?
Absolutely. Because
you've got me thinking now. Of the Magic and the Heat, which one player has the highest ceiling between both of those rosters? I know I'm putting you on the spot here, so you can take your time.
No, I think it's Isaac, to be honest with you. I think he's probably the player with the highest ceiling. I don't know, Phil, if you agree or not.
He was awesome in that third quarter.
I was going to say Dwayne Wade, but he's already reached that ceiling. But I think the highest future ceiling is probably Jonathan Isaac. I had this thought during that third quarter. I think he scored 11 of his 18 in the third quarter.
He did.
He's going to – when he figures things out, like, he can do a lot of really dangerous things on the floor. And it's right now is just kind of – you could kind of see early on in the game, the moment felt very, very big for him. And he struggled with the shot, but he kept shooting, and he just found a way. And it was really, really – I mean, the Magic do not get back in this game if Jonathan Isaac does not make shots. The Heat strategy
He made three three-pointers, or all three of his three-pointers in that third quarter too. That was huge for them.
I made this comment online during the game, during the first quarter, when I think he missed his first three or four three-pointers. He was getting a taste of how teams are going to defend him in the playoffs. They're going to dare him to beat them from the outside. And Miami was perfectly content to let Isaac shoot, you know, semi-contested threes. And he was missing them all. And that's a good shot for the Magic. That's a shot the Magic want Isaac to take. But that's not the highest percentage shot the Magic can get. And That's what he's going to face in the playoffs. And so to see him make that improvement within the game, to start hitting those shots, that completely flipped the game around for Orlando. And obviously, he's got a ton of defensive potential. That block he had on James Johnson late in the game was really a lifesaver for the Magic, too.
Yeah, I don't know which way I lean on this, because my first instinct, honestly, was to say, yeah, obviously Orlando, because you look at that team, there's so much length, there's so much size, so much athleticism. Jonathan Isaac, again, really good impression on me in this game and as we're answering this question. So, but I'm kind of looking at this, and I still want to say the Heat. Mm-hmm. I just, like, in Orlando, and maybe you guys disagree with me, but I feel like Nikola Vucevic is talented, but he's not, like, this. He wasn't a high draft pick. I feel like he's definitely maximized the most of what it is that he can do, right? There's still a ceiling with what he could do defensively, even though, like Philip said, and I agree, I think he's gotten better on that end this season. But, you know, you've got Isaac, you've got Aaron Gordon. Mo Bamba, I don't know, like, I don't want to get into the raw talent thing. I don't know what Mo Bamba is. Nobody knows what Mo Bamba is right now. And then you look at Miami, you've got guys like Bam Adebayo, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, obviously. Like, there's, like, we can kind of see what the roadmap for those guys is. Derek Jones Jr. looks really good for them. Then, there, you know, you've still got guys like Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside who are really talented. I'm going to lean towards the Heat on this one, but only because I could sort of see, like, there's, I kind of get what that talent is right now versus what the Magic are is still kind of theoretical. And I can kind of, I can point to two guys on the Magic who I really feel good about.
I feel like the intrigue of this question is, and I think this is kind of, I think been the story on the Heat for the last few years as they've played really well. And I think for a lot of people above their talent level in some ways, Miami has a lot of really talented players, but they don't have a lot of like top end talent players. A guy like Jonathan Isaac, a guy like Mo Bamba, and even a guy like Markelle Fultz are potentially top end talent guys. We don't know what they are. They're still kind of potential energy rather than kinetic energy. And that's really, I think, what this question boils down to. What's more valuable, having a lot of guys who are really talented, but not top end talented, or having a bunch of guys who are top end talented, who could still develop into a whole lot more?
I'll be honest, I forgot Markelle was on the Magic roster.
With the loss tonight, the Heat relinquished possession of the number 8 seed in the playoffs. They are now a half game behind the Magic, a game and a half behind Detroit and Brooklyn. And with 8 more games left in the regular season, the loss doesn't kill the Heat's playoff hopes, but it's important to note that if the Pistons and Nets don't fall out completely, they'll need to finish with a better record than Orlando, because the Magic currently own the tiebreakers. So with that, David, how are you feeling about Miami's playoff chances?
I still feel like they have a pretty good chance, to be honest with you. I know that, look, I had predicted this as a loss because I really do think that the emotion of that ceremony coming in the middle like that, not just the fact that it happened to be prolonged, really takes this group out of what they were trying to do. It disrupts their focus, which is, again, I think is absolutely necessary for them to pull out a win. I still, you know, I've been consistent all season long in saying that this team was a playoff team. I still believe that's the case. I find that they'll, even as they have, you know, tough games in the over the next 8 or so, that they'll be able to find a way to win those, because this team has been so unpredictable. We don't know where we're going to get out of. As people pointed out, they beat Oklahoma City and San Antonio at away games, and then they come back and lose on a big night to Orlando. Not to discredit Orlando, obviously, because they play such a good defense and everything else, but at the same time, you could say that, you know, the Thunder and Spurs wins are definitely more challenging, and yet Miami found a way to beat those teams pretty handily. So I feel like Miami will still find a way to knock off the teams that they have to, and I don't have much faith in Brooklyn being able to hang on to their playoff spot. I know Detroit is kind of hinging on you know, Blake's health, and that could be disrupted pretty easily. So to be honest with you, I still like Miami's chances. It's going to be close, obviously, but I still think that they'll get in.
Yeah, so if you look at the remaining strength of schedule of the 4 teams that we're really talking about here, Brooklyn, Detroit, Orlando, Miami, Brooklyn has the hardest remaining schedule in the league. Detroit has the 8th toughest schedule in the league remaining. Charlotte is at 13. Miami is at 15. Orlando is at 17. I threw Charlotte in there. I'm not really sure why.
They're still in this thing. Throw Charlotte out. They beat San Antonio tonight.
That's right. They did. So, yeah, they're in it. They're 2 games out. 1.5 games out of the 8th seed right now. So of those 5 teams, I guess, Philip, which 3 do you see making it?
Oh, man. Part of me is still a little skeptical that it's going to be the Magic, because, yeah, their defense is really good, They only have two more home games left this season of those eight, or of their final
seven.
They're
good ones, though. They're good ones against
Atlanta
and New York.
Yeah. But at the same time, this like you guys talked about the Heat going on the road, beating those really good teams, and then coming back and losing to Orlando. The Magic have struggled with some bad teams since the All-Star break. They lost to Chicago. They lost to New York. They lost to Cleveland. They were down 17 to Memphis at home. They lost on the road to Memphis. You know, they were able to finish things off tonight late in games, but and they've been generally pretty good late in games, but for the most part. But this is a team that plays a lot of close games, and they're not a team that's going to blow a lot of teams out. And late game execution, I think, is still a huge question mark for them. And like I said, yes, their defense has been good, but this is a team that has really never been tested in a playoff game. Tonight was honestly the first time I think that they really played in a playoff like atmosphere. Especially on the road where they're going to have to go. And they've got some big games coming up. They're on this 4-game road trip that takes them next to Detroit, then to Indiana, and then to Toronto. So it sounds like they have the easiest schedule left, but I do not think that this is an easy road home for Orlando at all. And I feel like this is still a team that you have a lot of questions about whether they can rise to this moment. I do kind of think that it's going to be Detroit, Miami, and between Orlando and Brooklyn to get into that get into the playoffs. But I think all five of these teams fighting for the last three spots, they're going to be within two games of each other down to the final day. I mean, that last day of the season when Miami plays Brooklyn, Orlando plays Charlotte, it's going to come down to that game. I feel like so it's still too hard for me to get a handle on.
Yeah, I might end up eating my words here, but because I kind of ruled out Orlando a couple weeks ago. There's no way.
We all ruled out Orlando a couple weeks ago.
That's true. And they're on a 6-game win streak. I think tied for the best win streak in the league with the Clippers right now. So they're putting it together. But I'm gonna write off Charlotte. The scouting report's too easy on them. I don't trust them down the stretch. Outside of Kemba, I just don't know who steps up for them. And you look at these other teams; they've got guys. Detroit, a little precarious. I don't love their remaining schedule. They've got to go on the road on tough games, or I don't know if they've got tough Western Conference games. I'm not sure if they're on the road, but I'm looking at their remaining teams
here.
They're
coming home from a West Coast trip tonight. That's right. While we're recording, they're playing at Denver.
So yeah, they've got the Denver game happening now. Looks like they're going to probably lose that. Portland, Oklahoma City. They've got the Pacers twice more.
Here's a question, because assuming that, you know, maybe Charlotte is the least likely team to advance of those five, if it comes down to, you know, Orlando versus Charlotte in that last game of the season, or the Magic are at Charlotte, and if Charlotte's out of the playoff picture, do they still take the challenge to become the spoiler in that sense? I mean, I'm not sure exactly what that, you know, the mentality would be there, but I could see them trying to upset Orlando in the last game of the season. If they're not necessarily competing for a spot, because again, Miami, Brooklyn, et cetera, have all advanced, would they try to spoil Orlando's chances of advancing in the playoffs?
Yeah, and then you look at the last game for Miami is against Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's really two huge games at the end of the season here that could come to play. Like, the NBA might get what they want. They might not have to like legislate this weird wild card game. They might get it at the end of the season in the Eastern Conference. There's a lot of big games still left to be played. And for Miami and Orlando, they get back to it on Thursday night. The Heat will play the Mavericks at home. Orlando will play in Detroit on Wednesday, and they'll continue this playoff push. But for now, that's all we have for today. And Philip, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for coming on my podcast as well as me being on your podcast.
It's a crossover.
Good to talk like real basketball this time of year. I know you guys are used to that. This I don't quite know what to do with my hands on this.
You're not scouting the draft. You're not ready for Ja Morant in a Magic jersey.
I have watched so little college, and it's so beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I do shout like future Magic whatever to every like mid level draft pick I see in the NCAA tournament. I'm like, future Magic forward Nasir Little gets 20 points tonight.
You a Taco Fall guy?
I am a big Taco Fall guy. I hope he gets a chance somewhere. But I think if you're looking at UCF players, Aubrey Dawkins I think has a really good chance to stick in the league. That kid can play. I think he was a little miscast as kind of the lead guy for UCF. He can fill a role. I think he can defend. He can defend a little bit, and he can hit that outside shot. So he'll probably go in the second round if he goes at all. That kid can play. He showed up against Duke, so I'm really excited to see if he enters the draft number one and B where he ends up.
It's a UCF basketball scout right there.
Charge on.
Charge on.